Welcome. It's Thursday night and time for Psychic Viewpoint on PsychicAccessTalkRadio.com with your hosts, Maureen Hollering, Steve Frampton, Brenda McCoy, and Bobby Marcheso. During the second half of the show, call in to connect for a free psychic reading. Join us during this transpersonal collective experience. Sponsored by PsychicAccess.com, where all psychics have been interviewed, verified, and accuracy tested, assuring you the highest quality of quality service. And now, on with this week's show.
Hello, my name is Brenda McCoy, also known as Lady Brenda, and tonight I'm actually taking over for Stephen Frampton. He's got a bit of the flu and he's lost his voice. And so I will be hosting the show with a fascinating guest. And you're listening to The Psychic Viewpoint, sponsored by PsychicAccess.com. In just a moment, Mary Lamondo will be speaking to us on the subject of the Gateway to the New Age. But before we get started, please welcome me in greeting my co-hosts. Maureen, how are you?
I'm doing okay. Thank you, Lady Brenda. And it's nice that you're here to step in for Steve. Bless his heart. Steve, you can hear me.
I know. I feel bad. I mean, it's nothing worse than that. I mean, not being able to speak.
And then you want to. Yeah.
I know.
You want to. It's not good. So we'll speak for him.
We shall speak for him. So, Maureen, tell us about what you do on Psychic Access and what you do in general with your life.
Well, I do dishes.
Not that stuff.
No, I do all sorts of things. I am an intuitive psychic empath, and I utilize the tarot, my main tool. And as I do, I feel strongly about the tarot being a symbolic record of human experience. And that's just because I've done some research. For the last 25 years, I've done some research on that. And I also love my work, and I help. I'm very well versed in helping people with business, financial ventures, and relationships as well, but especially spiritual development as well.
Oh. Well, that sounds fabulous, and anybody who's listening can get a reading with you on PsychicAccess.com.
They can, and even tonight too.
Even tonight after the show, and even a freebie too, huh? They could get lucky, right?
Yeah, thanks, Brenda.
Okay, now, Bobby, are you there?
Yes, what do you want?
Did I wake you up?
I was sitting here asleep. I'm taking a nap. What do you want?
Snap out of it. Tell us about yourself.
About my stuff?
We want to know all about you.
Really? I don't know if that's true. Gosh, psychic medium. I enjoy tuning into other people's journey. You know how we always tune into sometimes the problems, right? We create problems, they ask us for help, and we tune into and see that and feel the problem and say, here's how you move forward, and here's what I'm saying. But I really like tuning into the discovery energy of a person and then helping to kind of guide the way, and let's go this way, and then let's go this way. And then when they discover that, it feels amazing, and there's release on both parts. You know, it's very helpful to the both of us. It's circular, so I really enjoy doing that part of it. And you do that in many ways, you know, with the psychic stuff, and then also tuning into the medium part of it when you're connecting them with the loved ones who have crossed over.
And that's part of the special gift involved in the psychic work, the medium work, all of that.
Right.
Well, thank you, Bobby. And that leaves me, and I'm a predictive psychic. I specialize in dates, times, and places, and I work with all my lovely other hosts here on the show at PsychicAccess.com. And so we're looking forward to a really fabulous show tonight. I know I am, because I can't get enough about Egypt. I really can't. And this is going to be a show that, with a very special guest, Mary Lamondo, who is a Jungian astrologer and Egyptologist. She has over 20 years' experience in psychology, metaphysics, and world mythologies. As an archaeoastrologer, her areas of expertise are ancient Egypt and Peru. When you get a reading with Mary, she will help clarify your soul's purpose by focusing on karmic relationship patterns, past life experiences, and talents, future potential, which is also inherent in the birth chart, combining both astrological vision and intuitive guidance. She's able to facilitate and guide your personal transformation. Mary has lived and worked in Egypt, where she received her degree in Egyptology. She currently leads trips to Egypt and Peru and is researching the archaeological and astronomical connections between these two civilizations. She began Paca Terra travel as a way to share her love of sacred site travel and Mother Earth with like-minded individuals. You can find out more about Larry Lamondo at www.pacaterra.com. Hi, Mary. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Brenda. Well, it's nice to be here tonight. That is quite a mouthful that you just to get through there, but thank you very much for that wonderful introduction.
Well, you know, I know you're a friend of Steve's, and he's spoken so highly of you, and Egypt is a love of mine, too, and I'm sure we're going to have a great interview because we're going to talk about stuff that we really, you know, that's at the heart of our spiritual journey, I'm sure.
Yes, it is, and I think we have quite a lot of mutual friends with us tonight, both in and out of spirit, let's put it that way.
Definitely.
Sharing my love of Egypt has pretty much been my life's work, so I'm glad to be here.
So when did you first get interested in Egypt? I mean, like, what sparked your interest?
Well, it's kind of a roundabout, like life just kind of intervenes. It wasn't as if I always wanted to be an Egyptologist or, you know, I had kind of like an Indiana Jones thing from when I was young, because I didn't. I basically came to Egypt as a person who was doing research and working on a documentary about Egypt. And that, it kind of came about in very serendipitous ways. But once I was actually in Egypt, my first, you know, few minutes, I knew that just the air, something about it. This was back in 1989. And since then, it was like a conversion experience, and my particular place where all of this came about, like St. Paul on the road to Tarsus, was in front of the Great Sphinx. And to me, that was kind of like a soul repository, if you will, of all of my connections to Egypt, which was interesting because I didn't realize any of that until I was on site in Egypt as an adult. And I was already in my late 30s before I got the call that was something that I really needed to explore more of and incorporate into my life. And since then, I went back and forth on actually living there and studying there between 1989 and 1991. In 1991, I made the major move to, you know, stay in Egypt full time. And I was there until pretty much 1994, where I went to school. I got a degree in Egyptology there. I was lucky enough to be working with some of the best archaeologists in the field, Egyptian and foreign archaeologists.
That is so fabulous. And did you, which school did you go to? Were you part of the Chicago House, or what school were you part of?
I went to the American University in Cairo, and that's where I got my degree in Egyptology. But previous to that, I had been to NYU and Temple University in Philadelphia. So I came to Egypt as an adult. I guess I was in my late 30s when I actually decided that I was going to go to school in Egypt. I'd been working in New York and studying, and I was interested in art history. I was always interested in ancient history. It wasn't particularly Egyptology, though, until I made that first trip to Egypt, and then that's what sparked it all.
And it's so interesting because, reading up a little bit about you and where you've come as an Egyptologist, and maybe we can talk a little bit about the kind of the two schools of thoughts among Egyptologists. And we had John Anthony West as a guest, and I'm sure you've met him. He's great, and he talks about some of the really straight line archaeologists. He calls them the quackademics, where it looks like you have more of a spiritual bent and more of an interest in the actual spiritual development of the Egyptian civilization.
Well, yes, and John Anthony West he's actually one of the grandfathers of what we call maverick Egyptology, because John's one of the first people that I ever went to Egypt with, and because he was so schooled in so many different disciplines, he brings a lot to the table, and he's pretty no-nonsense when it comes to Egyptology. And if anyone ever needs to read anything about traveling to Egypt, I recommend John's books, because he really brought it to the table when people really weren't thinking in terms of Egypt, except as, well, the kind of like dusty old archaeology books, and you can kind of dig around in the sand. But bringing some of this, especially bringing the idea of the Sphinx as being much, much older than Orthodox Egyptologists say that it is, all of that, I think John spearheaded the movement for that in the early 1990s. And he's, to me, one of the most respected names in Egyptology right now. And then the 90s there was a huge renaissance in Egypt, and I was lucky enough to be there because I was studying, and I also, as a working adult in the United States, I had been able to go over to Egypt and do things that, let's say a student of 18 or 19 wouldn't be able to do. So having lived in New York, Cairo was not daunting to me in the least. I mean, I was a New Yorker, and I was able to meet people that were pretty high up in the echelons of archaeology, and also in terms of the Egyptian hierarchical structure anyway. So I was able to be there as people were coming over to write their books, to lead tours, to kind of spearhead this movement of looking at Egypt from a different perspective. I mean, John calls it the symbolist theory, which is excellent, because that's what Egypt is. It's one big symbol. I mean, there's just
it
no
is
way to look
it,
at.
It is the whole the everything points to all the symbolism everywhere you look.
So. And we're looking at converging timelines as well. I mean, when we think about it, at least 5,000 years of recorded history, plus the history that the ancient Egyptian priests themselves tell us go back at least 40,000 years. I mean, we're looking at something that it's kind of in and out of time at the same, the Egyptians were incredible, because what we're looking at today, when we look at modern day 2013 Egypt, to do them no disservice whatsoever, we're not perceiving Egypt the way the Egyptians from ancient days looked at it, because they had a different way of seeing things. It was like a holographic vision. Everything was symbolic. Everything was connected. We dissect things and we put them into little boxes and partitions, and that's part of the Western mind, and that's something that we've inherited from the Greeks and the Romans that were the end of Egyptian civilization. I mean, when we talk about where did the Egyptians get this information, where did they get this cosmology from, where did their sacred science come from, that's the big question mark, because it doesn't exist anymore. We're going back and we're kind of looking for it, that underground stream that had to do with archaeology, astronomy, medicine, magic, all of the things that we define and put into categories. They looked at it as one whole. There weren't separate compartments to it. And that's kind of what we're trying to get to when we talk about quantum physics today. But they grokked that immediately. They rise to the occasion way back there at Dynasty One. So that, that kind of leaves me anyway with my head scratching, like, what the heck was all of that about? When I went over there in Egypt the very first time, that was what just stood out. It's like, where is that Egypt? Why don't we see it anymore? Why is there nothing except, yes, there's temples and there's hieroglyphs and there's things in museums that we could go look at, but what happened to those people? it wasn't like the Mayans where they just kind of disappeared. This is like a civilization that was around for 5,000 years. What is it? What's the legacy? And why is it important to even know about it today? That's kind of what got me started about being in Egypt and leaving everything that I knew in New York to go sit myself in Cairo and learn all about it.
Well, it's so interesting, you know, and I'm listening to this, and we briefly touched on the whole sacred science of Egypt, and I love it when you said about magic, because magic has gotten so many negative, like, connotations, you know, here in the modern world, and, you know, magic is evil, this and that, although ancient Egypt was a magical society. It was a society where the interconnection between everything, you know, the nature, the universe, and the stars were all part of, you know, what they did in their everyday life. It was a holistic view, which we don't have now. We're living on bits and pieces, pretty much. And I was part of that whole 90s thing. We probably danced around each other with our own individual tours that we did in the 90s, because I was leading some groups in the 90s, too. And there is a real push for that. I noticed that there's so many spiritual groups going over there now. And, you know, it's just like you said, you go in there, you can feel the energies of those temples, but everything around it is completely, the energy is completely the opposite. And that makes me segue into this whole thing with the sacred sites of Egypt. And I wanted to talk and get your take on what you felt about some of the, there's a specific temple that I was curious to see what you feel is there, and that's the Necropolis of Saqqara.
Yes, well, Saqqara is an extremely massive site, first of all, and it was the site of what they call the original stepped pyramid. And so if you look at it from the eyes of Orthodox Egyptology, that the stepped pyramid, the seven steps of Saqqara, was the first pyramid, not the great pyramids of Giza. Now, I believe, as do a few other people, that Saqqara was part of a healing complex, if you will. It was actually the first capital of Egypt, and we know that, of ancient Egypt. But in terms of, if we're looking at this Egypt that predates the history that we know of, and Edgar Cayce talked about, call it the A word, that there was an Atlantean influx of individuals, if you will, that came into Egypt. And one of those places that was one of the original center points for that influx would have been the area of Saqqara. And the great wise man, magician, high priest, many, many titles of the seer that we know of as Imhotep probably was in that area of Saqqara. Now, Saqqara as an important site in Egypt itself started at the beginning of the dynasties, right there at Dynasty 3, and continues all the way through the Greek and Roman period and ends with the Romans themselves. So there's thousands and thousands and thousands of years of burials right there in Saqqara, which we can, as an archaeologist or an Egyptologist, go in there, even as a tourist, go around and putter around and look at things, and they're kind of layered. That, to me, is kind of like a key of understanding Egypt. It's one of the codes that you kind of get to learn about Egypt, is that nothing in Egypt just meets you straight on, linear fashion. Everything is layered. It's multidimensional. It's multi-textured. And when you start to look at things from that kind of lens of kaleidoscopic view, if you will, Egypt starts to turn and move, and you don't just see the Egypt that's, you know, kind of chaotic, modern, you know, the overview of the Egypt that we have today. You turn that lens a bit, and you kind of, Egypt moves. It moves into this kind of parallel reality where you walk and you see, and sometimes it's even visual, like a shimmery kind of perception around the corner of your eyes, where you can see and feel and hear and smell the texture of that ancient Egyptian vibration that goes way, way back, way into what we might even call a pre-Atlantean period in Egypt. And it's all about frequency. It's all about holding energy. Some people call it magic. There's many, many words for it. However, it's a vibration, and Egypt is, it's the alpha and the omega. There's no other vibration like it on this planet. That's why it's been here so long and why it will continue to hold that vibration. And the Sphinx is a marker point. It's kind of like a turnstile at Grand Central Station. It's where the dimensions merge. And there's parts and points up on that Giza Plateau where you stand in one area and you're transported. It's as if there's an elevator that takes you in and out of parallels. You can feel like you're in India. You can feel like you're in Peru. You can feel like you're in South America. You can feel like you're off planet somewhere. But there's something about the physicality of Egypt itself. It's able to hold that because it was laid down as this grid. Whatever was built on the earth matched a component in the sky. So we get that alchemical saying of as above, so below. It's like the Egyptians, with their sacred geometry and their great skill at architecture, they were able to infuse this into Egypt. It's like this, we call it magic, but it is this incredible vibration of connecting the stars with the earth. And they were extremely adept at knowing how to secure that connection.
And, you know, that is an otherworldly thing, too. Now, kind of going back towards Atlantis, and to kind of, you talked a little bit of travelers coming, you know, strangers from the West or settlers from the West, you know, people who came from Atlantis into Egypt. And there has been theories, lots of theories that Tehuti, as well as Isis and Osiris, who many believe were real people at one time, came from Atlantis. What is your theory on that?
Yes, I do believe that the mythology of Isis and Osiris and that original family, if you will, of Egyptian progenitors were real people. I think the mythology has been cloaked around them and the stories have been handed down, but originally that they came in and there was an Egypt that already existed. And so what we're talking about is a pre-Atlantean Egypt. And we're talking about people who didn't come in as invaders, and it wasn't like a chauvinistic, oh, we know more than you do, ha, 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 that kind of thing. If we think of, let's say, someone from, let's say, modern-day New York City decides that they're going to go move to London, and they bring all their belongings with them, they bring their people with them, they bring their, you know, books and everything that they kind of enjoy, and they come into London, it doesn't necessarily mean that they have to throw out, you know, whatever anyone else is doing in London to live there. It seems to me that that Egypt was, in other words, if we're looking at this as a way for mergings to happen, the Egyptians themselves talk about their civilization being around for 40,000 years, at least before recorded part of their history gets shown up in what we call history, that something was going on in Egypt. All those priests in Heliopolis and all those priests in Luxor and all those priests all over Egypt didn't make this up. It was handed down to them in different traditions. So if we're looking at, we don't necessarily have to look to the sky and say that the aliens came from outer space. We can just say that there may have been civilizations that moved into Egypt more than once. It was kind of like a flow, an ebb and flow, going back thousands and thousands of years. Now, what happened? We don't know. Some of these, you know, we raise more questions than we have answers, obviously. But, you know, people have written about this. Definitely Edgar Cayce goes into it way back when. But people like Grant Hancock, you know, Robert Bovall, John Anthony West, there are, you know, if we start to look between the nooks and crannies and what they say is Egyptology and archaeology, we find a story, we find the mythology. And where we look at that, we start to piece it together. And it doesn't necessarily have to be channeled. This is why I went there and studied for 4 years, because if we look at the Egyptian writings themselves, they tell us where their history began, and they tell us all about it. But the 18th century archaeologists from Europe, oh, that has to be, you know, that's crazy. That's just crazy talk. That can't be real, because it didn't fit there.
It didn't fit the parameters of the belief system, I'm sure.
Exactly. It couldn't be that. It had, you know, God created the world in 7 days, and therefore, you know, this couldn't exist. So if we start, and, you know, they were looking at all these fantastic reliefs and tomb paintings and all of the amazing art in Egypt, and they said, oh, well, this is just, you know, it's like Disney World here. This is just one big fairy tale. These people were childish. you know, look at this visionary, you know, hallucinatory stuff that they believed in. This can't possibly be real. Well, if we look far back into it, we see that what they're actually talking about is quantum physics, and how they explain it is it's revolutionary in its genius, because they found ways to explain things that we're just able to grok now. It's mind-blowing.
Well, you know, and because of all this, they were truly an advanced civilization. Their knowledge came from probably a place of, it might have been otherworldly, and there's a lot of theories on that. But what do you attribute in your studies that was to, you know, what was the fall of this Egyptian civilization? I mean, did it start with the priesthood or did it start when the Greeks came in? Because they brought a lot of different types of philosophies that kind of crushed a lot of this kind of holistic view of the ancient Egyptians. What is your thought on this?
Well, Egypt was around, like I said, for at least 4,000 to 5,000 years of recorded history, and it had its peaks and its valleys. I mean, it starts out very high in the first dynasties. The pyramid builders are in the fifth dynasty. We have a whole cosmology that's built around architecture, science, medicine, astronomy, physics, all of it, all of that good stuff. Then it goes into a decline. After couple hundred years, things just went downhill. It builds up again, and we have the Middle Kingdom. Down in Luxor, they start building temples. They start bringing back the old religion. It resurges. And again, invaders come in. It goes down again. Then it comes up again in the 18th dynasty. Most people know the pharaohs of the 18th dynasty. They know Tutankhamun. They know Akhenaten, Hatshepsut, Tutmosis III, Ramses in the 19th dynasty. That's the high point of Egypt. That's the Renaissance of Egypt, if you will. Now, it goes through more decline. More invaders come in. Invaders after invaders come in and yoke Egypt. However, the Egyptian spirit, if you will, and this idea that they are the ones who are responsible for keeping order in the world, their religion always has that as its basis. It's like, as above, so below. The cornerstone of Egypt doesn't ever change, even though the rulers come and go up and down. The very end of Egypt, there were black rulers. There were pharaohs from Nubia that sent their daughters up to rule from Luxor. I mean, that's the 25, 26 dynasties. We end with the Greeks coming in, with Alexander the Great, who never actually lived in Egypt, but he founded the city of Alexandria. He was a Macedonian Greek. Then they started to rule from up in Alexandria. The final end of the Egyptian history as we know it is Dynasty 36 with Cleopatra. She is the final pharaoh of Egypt, is Cleopatra. And she's Greek. Her family is from the dynasty of Ptolemy, who was one of the generals of Alexander the Great. He inherited Alexandria when Alexander died coming home from India, and that's how Cleopatra's family starts to rule Egypt. By the time Cleopatra dies, and we know the story of Julius Caesar and Mark Antony and all of that, she's the end of Egypt. So anyone who loves Cleopatra and, you know, has read her biographies or watched her, you know, the movies about her life, you're watching the end of Egyptian civilization. And then what happens is the Christians come in, the Romans come in, and it's the new age. The age of Pisces is beginning, and the age of Aries goes down with Egypt.
Well, that was a sad time. That was a sad time, I believe. And what about Nectanebo? I mean, he was the last native pharaoh, wasn't he? And a magician. He was also a magician.
Well, here, this is what we're talking about, the Greco-Roman influence, where the high magic gets kind of diluted. The original, well, we use the word magic. Let's talk about command of maybe quantum physics, which a normal person wouldn't really understand, but, you know, they had priests, they had shamans, they had, there was various degrees of the Egyptian religion, just the way today there would be an inner circle of, let's call it any mystical society, and an outer circle. Not everyone was privy to the way things worked. Nectanebo was an interesting person, but he was studying books that were written 3,000 years before he was born. And so the knowledgeable Greeks that came in, who were schooled by philosophers, learned from the feet of Egyptians thousands of years before, and this information was passed down in the underground stream. I mean, all of this, what goes around comes around. And every person who studies any kind of magical or occult discipline today, it's like it all comes from Egypt. If you study Western magic, every single thing you know comes from Egypt. Now, I'm not talking about India's philosophy or the Far Eastern, but if you study Western magic, it all comes from Egypt.
Well, it's interesting, too, and Egypt has a way of making itself known in every age that we live in. I mean, look what's going on now over there, which, you know, hopefully, I mean, it can be a blessing and a curse on the temples. What do you believe? Do you believe that the current government is going to make it harder to be able to visit these sites, or that they might even actually tear down some of these sites because of the Islamic belief system?
Well, I just came back. I was there until December 14th when I came back, and I'm going again in March. I'll be leaving March 1st. The thing with Egypt, like I said, it's got its peaks and valleys. I was there for the Egyptian Revolution. I was there in Egypt the whole time from the beginning to the end. And the thing about it is, like, if I'm also an astrologer, and the tides of change were coming. January the 11th, you know, Egypt was in that Arab Spring soup of revolution that was going on with these Saturn-Uranus transits. And those transits are around, by the way, until 2015. So we haven't seen the end of, you know, ferment in the Middle East by a long shot. Egypt, as I said, it's like this parallel, in and out of dimensional time. It's like the government that's there is a blip on the screen right now. And then, again, I'm doing no disservice to the Egyptians that are living there, because most of my friends are Egyptians. But none of them voted in an Islamic government. So there was a void that was created, and this government got in. Will they stay in power? No, I don't think so. I think the tide of change is too strong to have a repressive society. The age of Aquarius, we just talked about the age of Aries moving into the age of Pisces. We're leaving the age of Pisces, moving into the age of Aquarius. Aquarius is freedom. Repression will not be allowed to stay, especially in Egypt. Egypt leads the way.
To the goddess's ears. Let me tell you that.
Well, and it's all about taking the feminine energy. And remember when I talked about Egypt? Egypt is very much in the eye of the beholder. The eye of Egypt was the symbol everywhere. It's that systematic integration of the left eye, the right eye, the pineal, the pituitary, left brain, right brain. It's all about merging and seeing things in a new light. Now, in Egypt, as in the rest of the planet, we're moving towards bringing in balance to the masculine hierarchical structures and bringing in more feminine energy. Where better but the Middle East to have that come up, you know, and just rear its head, because that's where the most work needs to be done. That's where the shadow goes in the deepest. Egypt is always and always will be about the goddess. So it's not to diminish what's going on over there, because politics is a big issue if you're in the middle of the swirl. The idea is that it's all about balance, and sometimes things have to swing 180 degrees to one side before they can get balanced from the 180 degrees to the opposite side. So what we're looking at is things coming into a balance in Egypt, the weighing of the scales, the heart with the white feather of Mut. It will come into balance because the Aquarian age says that it must. There's no way for it not to happen. However, you know, when we're looking at I said these transits will be around until 2015. We're looking at about maybe 4 or 5 years of uncertainty. You know, the antiquities in Egypt, this could be a whole other show. The antiquities in Egypt are too important for Egypt, for anyone to destroy them or try to keep them down. I mean, all those rumors, it's just crazy. They just opened the third pyramid while I was there in December. Instead of just having two pyramids open for people to go into, their government opened a third. So it's kind of even the opposite. They want tourists to come back into Egypt, and they're bending over backwards to open sites that were never opened. I just went into the Serapeum in December, and that's been closed since 1989. So,
the Serapeum is amazing. I've been in there.
Yes,
the strabium is. Now that is something that they can't explain how those sarcophagus got in there. I mean, I can't believe they were rolled on logs and with milk or whatever they said to get those in there. There had to be some other way to get those giant sarcophagus in there. Don't you agree?
Yes, and that's just the tip of the iceberg of you know, how did the Egyptians do it? I mean, there is so much about Egypt that we can't explain. And again, when we think about how they were dealing with principles and physics and laws of nature that they had a way of working with that perhaps we've lost. I live in southern Florida, and the Coral Castle is one of those anomalies where, you know, this little 5-foot, you know, European man built this amazing stone structure that looks pretty much like the Giza Plateau in southern Florida. You say, well, how did they do that? We know that there are principles and there are laws of physics that can be manipulated. That's all magic is. It's manipulating the laws of matter. If you can figure out or someone can tell you how to do that, then, you know, you win the $50 million question. The idea is that the Egyptians were using a system, if you will, that was kind of, I believe, they inherited, or I don't know if they actually made it up, but it feels like however they were able to do these things, it was a system that they inherited, and we've lost the codes to how to do that. And that's where the mystery is. It's going back there and kind of sussing all of that out. I go to Peru all the time as well, and there's things in Peru that I'm standing in Peru, and I feel like I'm looking at Egypt because they are exactly similar. It's as if the same building company went over there, but instead of putting it in the middle of the desert, they put it on the highest mountain of Machu Picchu. I mean, it's
uncanny. Well, let's hold that thought for a minute. We got a break for 1 minute commercial, and I mean, I hate to. We're on a roll here, but we'll be right back, okay?
Thank you.
A new era in psychic services has begun. PsychicAccess.com. You can connect with our psychic advisors by telephone or chat 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. All of our psychic advisors are interviewed, fully verified, and accuracy tested, assuring you quality service. We're living in some very troubled times right now. More and more, the world's problems are affecting us on a personal level. You don't have to deal with this alone. Our highly accurate psychics, caring advisors, and talented mediums can help with situations you are currently experiencing and can let you know what the future may hold for you. All new customers get a free 6-minute reading. All you have to do is register. Why not visit us now and get a free reading at psychicaccess.com?
Okay, we're back with Mary Lamondo. Boy, this is like dark chocolate to me. Just a wonderful treat. And we had left off, we were talking about the comparison between the temples and the monuments of Peru with ancient Egypt. And this is just fascinating. Can you elaborate on that, Mary?
Well, you know, in brief, to go back and when we were talking about Edgar Casey, one of the things that struck me, again, I never thought I was going to go to Peru or have anything to do with Peru, but in 1994, a friend of mine convinced me to leave Egypt for a while and go to Machu Picchu, and I did, and I kind of had a similar experience in Peru. It's when I got there, I thought, wait a minute, you know, this stuff doesn't make sense, and there are so many similarities in the architecture of the Incas. The Incas themselves called themselves Sons of the Sun, the same way that the ancient Egyptians did and the same way that the Atlanteans did. They built sun temples the same way that the Egyptians did, and they have very similar burial practices, the way they lay out their cities and also the way that the Inca ruled, pretty much the same kind of God on earth type thing as the Pharaoh. I mean, their cosmology is very, very similar. The Incas themselves come into play in the 1500s. They actually come very late on the scene in South America and Peru. We're talking about Egypt 4,000 years ago. So where do those timelines connect? I mean, you know, how is it even possible that these Peruvians, these Inca tribes, had the same ideas as the ancient Egyptians. So if we look at that and we go back to that idea of perhaps there was an influx of people coming from different lands as those lands broke up in these pre-Diluvian civilizations, some of that starts to make sense. And, you know, mine's much more brilliant than mine have, like, kind of pieced this all together over the years. And one of the people that I first read that made perfect sense to me on this was Graham Hancock, who was a brilliant English researcher, and he's still around. He still does tons of good stuff. But he was also talking, and his book is called Fingerprints of the Gods, where he goes into a lot of detail. I wasn't familiar with that book when I went to Peru. All I thought was, like, you know, my eyes are seeing this and my brain saying, this can't exist. And the Sun Temple in Cusco, Peru, which is called Gate of the Sun, total beautiful enclosure in their main city, is built on the same idea with sacred geometry, the same axial proponents, if you will, as the Great Pyramid in Giza. I mean, it just makes no sense. Like, they had no connections to each other. But why do they come up with the same information? Well, you could say it's a good idea. It's like reinventing the wheel. So if somebody came up with it in 5000 BC, somebody comes up with it in 1400. I don't buy that because it's just too unusual. And so, again, we raise more questions than we actually have answers for. But the cosmology of the Incas, they talk about the Milky Way. They talk about the idea of their as above, so below grid of their temples matching the stars in the sky. They have different stars because they're south of the equator, but the idea is still the same. It's as if there was this original race of wise builder people that kind of went around and just populated the planet on these particular acupuncture point lines for what the new grid of a planet post-flood was supposed to look like. And I've been up at Tiwanaku, which is amazing, because Tiwanaku looks like the Giza Plateau, but it's on Lake Titicaca, which is the highest lake in the world, 15,000 feet above sea level. It shouldn't be there. So it's like you walk around, and again, you just kind of scratch your head and say, wait a minute, you know. However, these things do exist. They're on our planet, and luckily enough, we can actually buy airplane tickets and go see them. I don't believe anyone is going to be able to stop us going to sacred sites. I don't believe the energy at sacred sites can be co-opted as long as there is an Earth, and Earth will have a aura and a body of energy around. These sites are part of us, we're part of them, and we're all part of the sky, if you will, and we are connecting the dots. As we get more and more into the idea of the age of Aquarius, which is, you know, we've gone past the marker point of 2012, and now we're moving into the, you know, 2020s, if you will. Once we get closer to some of these intersections of time and space, grid coordinates, if we're looking at them on a diagram, we're going to see that these sacred sites are going to make much more sense because we're going to start to actually understand them. It's like they've been this library waiting for us to get the library cards and start reading the codes. We're finally evolving to the point where we can understand what they mean. That's why they've been here for so long. And I don't think they're going to go anywhere too quick, and I don't think anyone is capable of closing them down. They're not to be closed.
Well, in talking about all these, the similarities with all these sacred sites, and actually all over the world, even this in Stonehenge, and you know, their whole, you know, their particular you know, myth of creation is very similar to the ancient Egyptians' myth of creation, as well as being a solar-based belief system, and all these similarities. And then there's the all this stuff that everybody's talking about it on TV now, about the ancient alien things, and, you know, that they have this connection with the stars and those advanced civilizations from the stars. Do you believe that that contact with advanced civilizations from other solar systems is part of this whole interconnection all over the world?
Yes, I do. I mean, I believe that initiates from time immemorial, evolved souls, if you will, put on this planet have always been in contact with beings, higher intelligences. If those beings necessarily have to visit in hardware and ships, well, then so be it. I've never seen one, although I can, you know, I can attest to the fact that many people have. I believe that people have always had the capacity to channel. That's what separates us from animals. And I believe that on a spiritual quest, the whole idea is to discover the Godhead inside yourself. Therefore, I believe humans are part starseed, part DNA from other areas, if you will, interstellar DNA, whatever we want to call it. We're here, and we always have had contact. We've never lost certain contact. Do I believe, as some people do, that aliens actually came down to build these things? I don't know if they necessarily had to do that. I think as long as
they may not
contact,
have to. If your theory is correct and it's a DNA type of thing that we possess within us, then it could be a multidimensional thing.
Well, and there's always been people who have been able to channel information. Let's say, you know, in Edfu, the Edfu texts talk about the Temple of Edfu in Egypt. They talk about how there were, and this is supposedly a book, books that were written by the Thoth himself, the god Thoth himself.
Tehuti.
Dictated, yes, Tehuti. Nine sages, nine books, nine sages. And each one of these sages had a particular discipline that he was master of. Whether it was astronomy or medicine or magic or you name it, there were supposedly nine books there. And they contained the information and the knowledge and the wisdom of everything on Earth, everything that we were ever supposed to know. Well, interestingly enough, it got wiped out. We don't know what happened to those scrolls. They don't exist anymore, blah, blah, blah. However, the idea was that from the Egyptian time immemorial, they believed that there was knowledge, a body of knowledge, information knowledge that was given to them whole. It wasn't in little pieces. It was given to them whole. And it was given by these nine sages. Well, who were the nine sages? Were they nine beings from interplanetary travel? Who knows? They could have been. Were they nine wise men who came from Atlantis? Well, we don't really know. We just know that the Egyptians tell us that there was a body of knowledge that they know goes back to the beginning of the followers of Horus, who were around 40,000 years ago. And in Egypt, before the followers of Horus existed 40,000 years ago, prior to Heliopolis, that's when the gods walked on Earth. And they believed that there were men, gods, god-men, or whatever you want to call them. And so it does give us pause to ponder. You know, this is what the ancient Egyptian priests handed down and told the Greeks thousands of years later, and the Greeks believed it. They went back to Greece and told everybody, hey, this stuff is, you should see what's going on in Egypt. You all got to come over and go study in these secret societies over there in Egypt. Go find yourself a mystery school. It was like a big fad in Greece to go over and study in Egypt. And
that is so fascinating. I'm glad you brought up the followers of Horus, because on the previous shows, we've never really delved into that whole, you know, that whole theory of the followers of Horus and the different aspects and names of the god Horus, too. And all of that must be all interconnected. It's all pre-dynastic, isn't it?
Yes, it is. And when you look at the gods themselves, now, yes, I do believe that Isis and Osiris were real people and that they did have a son who became the first pharaoh of Egypt. When we're looking at some of these other gods, I believe what we're looking at are aspects. We're looking at archetypes, if you will, because the Egyptians had this really, they had an overlay of religion. It wasn't just one religion. They had a stellar religion, they had a solar religion, and they had a shamanic religion. They interweave them through 5,000 years of time. So you get these different ages of religion that pop up, and then they kind of go out of style, and then they kind of reinvent it, and it comes up through another tradition in another city, in another capital, and those priests are the ones that are kind of like the big mahavs, and they're the ones where everybody is listening to how they're kind of teaching the word. But in essence, especially when we look at the older ones, if we're looking at very, very primal archetypes, and Horus the Elder, the Horus that the Temple of Edfu is dedicated to, is the element of light that overcomes chaos. It's like the old balancing act of know, yin and yang. You can't have one without the other. And that's kind of the primal, that's a very primal principle in Egyptian theology. You must have the balance. You must have the interplay between the two. You can't, because in the beginning there just is the void. There just is darkness. But darkness can't be allowed to exist. It doesn't want to exist, and from the darkness comes the light. That's what we have. That's what we have, the myth of Horus, and we have the myth of Atum springing up from nothing. It's a really interesting idea, because when you go way back to it, you could kind of look at their explanation for the Big Bang theory, quantum physics, cell division, you name it. They have it all encapsulated in some of these mythologies. Horus the Younger, the son of Isis and Osiris, I believe is that more human counterpart. When we think of ourselves as, okay, we're all part of God, but we're human. You know, it's the human part of us. It's the younger Horus who goes through all the, you know, adventures as the son of Isis and all of that. But that very primal Horus the Elder, he's the aspect of light that's in constant renewal against the darkness. It's very interesting, because that temple holds a lot of, there's a lot of mysteries in that temple of Edfu.
Edfu is amazing. Edfu being the temple of the priests, and Dendera being the temple of the priestess, and I hear that you're growing a blue lotus and trying to nurture a blue lotus back, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe that in the oil room in Edfu, there is pictures on the wall of the blue lotus, like depicted, carvings, recipes.
Yes, the blue lotus is everywhere on the carvings in Edfu, and also at Dendera as well, in the perfume rooms there. Midwifing the blue lotus back into Egypt is a project that I took on about 3 years ago. And basically the idea is to have enough blue lotus growing in Luxor so that we can replenish and give them back to the temples. It would be great to go back into Karnak Temple and the Sacred Lake there and see the blue lotus back in its original environment.
Wouldn't that be fabulous?
Exactly. You know, the Egyptian Revolution kind of put a, damper on some of the original project work that, you know, was the beginnings of it. But, you know, that's the idea. Some of these things, it's like they're a process. It's like the lotus is holding energy. It's holding a frequency. And these lotuses are basically from, they feel to me like they're from a whole different planet of species. They don't even come from the earth, really. And that their energy is about renewal, it's about immortality, and it's about pushing the envelope on the human condition. And the medical properties are astounding. So why they are not there, and why they haven't been there for a very, very, very long time, it's the same reason why the Sphinx was buried up to its neck in sand, and a lot of those temples weren't found for hundreds and hundreds of years. When the time is right, the elements for evolution appear, and it is not an easy task to help bring these things forth. It's not. If it was easy, all humans would have been enlightened by now. Obviously, there are some rungs to have to go through yet, and I think that what we're looking at, if we kind of see the clues, and we really open our eyes, it's like we're on a fast track. We don't have to go through the initiations that took lifetimes before, you know. And I've taken thousands of people to Egypt by now, probably, and everyone has their own personal glitch, or everyone has a past life where, you know, maybe they felt like they didn't make it through an initiation, or maybe they had a bad life in this place or that place or whatever. But the idea is now we're kind of moving through that quickly. We don't need to labor under those delusions and fears anymore. That's the fast track to enlightenment, if you will. And the downfall of the fast track is, if you make any mistakes, you don't have anyone to blame but yourself. There's no hierophant, there's no high priest, there's no temple dog telling you what to do anymore. You've got to know it, and you've got to trust yourself, and you have to follow your own truth. It's very difficult. The Age of Aquarius is not for the faint of heart. It's about knowing who you are, having the courage of your convictions, speaking your truth and then allowing the other person the same liberties, if you will, spiritual, personal, and physical.
Well, thank you so much, Mary. You know, and I wish we had more time. We could go on for hours.
Exactly.
And I just want to thank you for, you know, imparting your knowledge and your experience and your wonderful pearls of wisdom on Egypt. And we would love to have you back again. Thank you.
Thank you. I know there's a lot more to say. And I would just like to add, if anyone is interested in going back to Egypt with me, I'm having a trip in March. And I'm also doing a trip to Peru, a shamanic journey to Peru in September 2013. That information, please contact me. You can find me on my website, or you can just Google my name, Mary Lamondo, and everything pops up. It's real easy.
Is this on the perpetualpilgrim.com as well?
It may be. It may be. But Pachaterra is my website. But again, if anyone just goes to Mary Lamondo, you can find it quite easily.
Okay, well, thank you very much. Have a good evening.
You're so welcome, Brenda. I look forward to speaking to you again. Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye. Well, there's the end of our interview. But please, you know, we have to take a moment for a few announcements, but stay with us for free readings at the end of the show. And we will announce the number later. If you're unable to catch our last show that we had, which was on the Three Secrets of Aging, you'll find a recorded archive link as well as the archives of all our previous shows on psychicaccessradio.com under the Archives tab. Please feel free to circulate the archives links and future show details to your friends and family. It's our objective to connect with as many individuals as possible, so please share that link with others. Please be sure to visit our psychicbloggers.com site as well to learn about everything from the paranormal, reincarnation, and the how-tos of psychic development. If you are interested in a reading from the best professional psychics on the net, go to psychicaccess.com where you'll find the best verified, accuracy-tested psychics, each with their own unique gifts and each with a detailed profile for you to find out more about them and to choose from the list of some of the most authentic, gifted psychics around. It is an honor working with Doug and Psychic Access, and because of the high expectations required of each one of the psychics. All of our co-hosts here on PsychicAccessRadio.com work for Psychic Access, and if you'd like a personal reading from any of us, be sure to visit us at PsychicAccess.com. We would love to hear from you. By the way, site owners and webmasters can earn an extra 50 cents a minute on every reading on traffic that is referred to psychicaccess.com. For more details, please visit us at psychicaccess.com/webmasters. And if you like our show, please invite your friends and join us in our chat room to listen to the Psychic Viewpoint. There is something for everybody, so please spread the word. We really appreciate it. Again, the call-in number, when we're ready, we're not ready yet, is 724-444-4851. Okay, Maureen, what did you think about the interview?
Oh, she obviously knew exactly what she was wonderful. And I also feel, you know, my older sister, yeah, I have not been to Egypt. I haven't been anywhere. I've been to other type of places, but she was talking about Peru, Machu Picchu. And you know, my
Machu Picchu, yeah.
Machu Picchu. And my older sister goes on these holidays. Her idea of a holiday is going and walking up in blistered feet to the top of the mountain there and doing work with the shamans and everything. And anyway, it was really lovely talking about this. And also what was fascinating to me is because I'm real into Atlantis. I mean, Atlantis has been it's like Atlantis for me, or it's like Egypt for you, although I can't go visit Atlantis.
But you have the fascination with dolphins and that dolphin connection.
Oh, yeah, and Atlantis. I've always felt a connection with Atlantis. And when she was bringing up some things, it gave me even more information because I do know that with the there is some, no, you know, I'm not, this is just my view and from what I've not, you know, researched, but there is some interesting notes about the secret and the location of Atlantis and along with the Egyptians. And I found that to be, I was really happy to hear that she presented that out there in the interview. I thought it was great. And I'm going to get ready to do another show on Atlantis. And like I said, I wasn't really, it was just so new to me. I really enjoyed her. She was very, she knew exactly what she was, she knew what she was saying.
She had a veritable plethora. She knew her stuff.
Exactly. And everything that she was connecting with, like the magic, you know, I felt that she, what she's saying about the Egyptian magic, and I really find that fascinating. But yeah, she really was something.
Respect for her and her studies, and she's taken it one step further and blending the esoteric history with you know, the cut and dry archaeological stuff, which is not what, you know, that's just the mundane. I mean, you can't explain Egypt just with the mundane, like this is how old this mummy is, or
exactly,
this mummy, or blah blah blah. Now you've got to blend the esoteric. I found her to be very well rounded. Absolutely,
yeah, very much so. And I did get a lot. And you're right about that. That's exactly what I feel like. Like when she, you can't just do it. She esoteric. The metaphysics she brought it into, the especially the Egyptian magic.
It was pretty fascinating.
It's very fascinating. Great job.
Bobby, what did you think about it? What are your thoughts about Egypt?
Well, it's crazy. I think, you know, the more and more that we do Egyptology stuff on the show, it just seems like that was really the hub, you know, long ago into our roots and where we're at today. And it almost seems as though, I don't know, is it real... I've never had this idea before until listening to her, but is it almost that, you know, like they had all of this knowledge and then somehow we became stupid and that we're trying to get back into the spiritual and we're all striving for something, but we already had it. In other words, it's not like we're attaining anything. We're trying to get back to what we had back when from Egypt. You know what I mean? Does that make sense?
Like we got dumbed down, or somewhere along the line we were hit with the idiot stick. No.
Yeah, something happened. You know?
Something did happen. And you know what? I believe it was, and I've studied this a lot, as you know, but I believe that when it all started, when man-made religion came onto the scene.
Yeah, I mean, there's.
You can't manipulate those things.
Right. I've heard a saying before that said, in the beginning there was God, and then the devil came along and called it religion.
Well, that makes an awful lot of sense. It really does, because there was never really, like, you know, it's not about the controlling, but the connection, you know, this, and with the man-made religions and the Christianity religions and even the other religions that came in, which were right towards the fall of Egypt, they separated the people from God.
Absolutely.
And that's not to say that the ancient Egyptians didn't have elitist priests and priestesses, but everybody felt that they were interconnected with the God source. It was all part of living and breathing in ancient Egypt. But these days we're in, you know, that it could be why everything's so absolutely crazy now. Don't you believe?
Yeah, it just feels like this massive energetic high to me as I'm kind of psychically looking at the timeline right now. And then this huge just dip into almost nothing, and then us trying to rise, and then the bar graph kind of rising up from that to where we're at today.
It's like we're scrambling to find it again.
Yeah.
And the very fact that we have to deal with the suppression, you know, of the female energy is just ludicrous.
It is ludicrous. Actually, everything, not only just that, but everything it is that we've created today, these so-called problems. that there isn't, like in all the coaching that I do, there isn't anything to resolve. It's all in our heads. It's all a thought that there is even a problem to begin with. So it's more unraveling and getting back to rather than, you know, trying to achieve something or trying to find something. So women empowerment, which I feel that we're finally getting back more into the feminine. I think it started, you know, with the new year here. And we're finally starting to get back into the millennium because guys have screwed up things long enough.
Well, tell that to the mullahs over there, you know, and what's happening in India, you know?
I know. So, yeah, it's I just think it's all made up. And we have to try to unravel what isn't necessarily true to begin with. You know, we have to act like there's a problem so that we can help them psychically and get them back to empowerment. You know, it's kind of a ridiculous game, really.
Well, right? if you think about it, really, we are living in a space of at the most 80 something to 90 something years. And then all this kind of stuff takes place over hundreds of years. So perhaps we're just looking at a blip here, a negative blip, but maybe the next blip is more positive.
Yeah, well, you know? We're heading in that direction. I had heard something one time that if we were all to just finally be on the same page and really start with our self-development, concern and compassion for other people in the world, not just in our little bubbles, that if we were to start today, that it would probably take us close to 800 years to get to that, not utopia, but you know, that place of caring, understanding, spiritual freedom, all of that that we're so trying to achieve today. So it may take a while, you know,
To dispel all the bad juju?
Yeah, to get everything out and have people stop making shit up is basically it, you know? I mean,
oh, my. Well, what do you think about that, Maureen? What's your thoughts?
I'm enjoying listening to the two of you, no doubt. And I really think what Bobby and you are talking about, I concur.
Join in our kibitz about it, right?
Yeah, kibitz. I love the other, there's another word to use, kibitz. And then also I want to go back into what she was talking about, because the Egyptian magic, I just need to go back into that. You know, because it seems to me like the Egyptians used magic for both practical and religious purposes. So they, in some ways, to me, from what I've come to relate to and what I've researched and stuff, correct me if I'm wrong, Brenda, maybe you have more insight on this, probably, but they believed that magic was a divine creation for the benefit of humanity.
Absolutely.
And that's what I find very soothing. I find it very soothing.
Well, you know, their belief in the interconnection between themselves and the universe was, I mean, there wasn't really a delineation, and magic was a way of focusing their energies to manipulate these forces to do their will.
Exactly.
See what I mean?
Yeah.
And they believe that there is something called the Hika, which was, you know, the spirit energy that animated everything, you know, people, plants, everything, and that the Hika energy can be called forth. Mm-hmm. They also believed, interestingly enough, and you know, we didn't have time to really get into this, but I believe this too, because in my work with ghost hunting and spirits and spirit energies, and people are always asking you, they're always going, well, whatever happens to the spirit when they die? I mean, do they move on to another life? When do they move on to their another life? Well, the ancient Egyptians believed that the soul had seven aspects. Mm-hmm. And some of those aspects were like the shadow that was always there. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Even after the person died. So there was still like a residue, you know, of the
person. Which makes sense. I always say that makes sense, because it's like imprinted in the walls, whatever I call it sometimes, which is like a residue of anything. But, you know, to me also, it was like the magic, it was like considered a field of knowledge, just like the architecture and literature, medicine and all that, and in coping with the environment, like you were talking about, and coping and manipulating and controlling the god, their gods.
Which, well, it was a way that they communicated with their gods, and they and their you know, their interaction with their gods, because the different deities, and this is where it was totally, people have gotten it wrong. They think, oh, well, these are, is it idolatry, blah, blah, blah. Really wasn't. The different gods and goddesses represented the aspects of the creator. There was in ancient Egypt the creator force, and then the male and female aspects of the creator. And, you know, you pick one that you feel most familiar with, and you don't have to stick with one. I mean, they had many different, there was 6,000 different gods in ancient Egypt at one time. Seriously. I mean, every little village had their own special ones. I mean, everybody had a little altar to Bastet, the cat goddess, you know. This is symbolic stuff, you know. These were forces in nature that they wanted to connect with that were godlike. I mean, I think cats are godlike.
Yeah, I love Basques. I love when we started the show a couple of years ago. It was a different format, and I was in charge of the goddess or goddesses for each show that we did topic, and that's why I got real into Basques because of the cat. Yeah, and how they also, you know, they get their cats out of the fire before the before
they get
humans.
Their bits out of the fire. They sure do
before the humans. They I was the goddess.
It's so funny. When we were doing the interview, of course, my cat opened the door and came in, made a meow, went out, circled around me, and went out. And she's the color, the sacred color of the sacred cats, which is they weren't black back then, but they revered, the most revered color for a cat in ancient Egypt was tortoiseshell, and the dark one with the orange flecks.
Oh yeah,
yeah, you've seen those, haven't you?
Yes, I have. Yes, I have. I know exactly what you're saying. I didn't know that. That's knowledge is power. You've given me some more knowledge with that. Excellent.
and it goes quiet.
No, we were waiting for you to jump in, like feet first, and
I'm here.
Tell us what you thought.
What?
See, what's your thought about it? You don't know that much about magic. Well, you probably, everybody, all of us that do this kind of work, we do a little bit of it in the work that we do, seriously.
I guess your perception of magic, yeah. I mean, I can pull a quarter out of your ear, you know.
But, well, what's the one that your uncle used to always do with his finger, you know?
Yeah. No, that was a pull my finger, then he would fart. No, that's something
different. No, not that one.
Oh, you mean the, look, my finger's cut. My finger's
yeah,
cut.
Yeah, exactly, right.
Oh, I gotcha. Yeah, you don't know my uncle. Anyway, so.
Yeah, I do.
thank you. I think everybody's got one. Yeah, I you know, it depends on your perception of magic. Magic to me, and it's a very, I mean no disrespect, and because I'm very, I guess it's a very, gosh, what's the word I'm looking for? Naivete look at magic, of, you know, spells and getting together and combining energy and then making something happen, you know, from a spell book. That can be, I believe sincerely in, I think that can completely be. I think there might have been these books that are handed down from generation to generation. I mean, look at Salem witch trials. I think those were, you know, I think there were Salem witches that unfortunately were killed because of what they did, whether it be good or bad.
They were mostly herbalists and healers.
They were herbal, and they were lovely people, Bobby. And you were the one who put me to my death back in a past life.
Oh.
No.
What was that, Matthew, the witch finder? What was his name?
I forgot. Bobby, do you know who that might have been?
I love you.
Vincent Price played him in a movie, I think. The witch finder.
Oh, I don't know.
I remember that, as a matter of fact.
I can't see me doing that to anybody. Maybe if I did that in a past life, maybe that's why I do what I do in this life.
That's right. You have to make up for what you did.
And I shall be cursed with the magic.
Oh.
That's why he says such nice things to me knowingly. Just because.
Got a lot of sucking up to do.
Sucking up to do, all right. Yeah, sucking up to do. You know what, though, about the magic thing, Bobby? Kind of sound like Steve a little bit, kind of, you guys. What you bring up, I the thing about the Egyptian magic, what I was saying is I kind of felt it's a lot different than what we're talking about in the nowadays, because I feel that even white magic is manipulative and really silly. Well, it's not silly. It's very I mean, you know, Brenda, Bobby, you know, white, black, whatever. I participated in white, but still it's manipulative. But the way Egyptian magic was just more about, like I said, it was all about, it's like a medicine, humanitarian, and for the good of protection. And
there is a huge misconception about magic, and it's something that, you know, it's a huge, huge misconception about it. And I believe fully that if you don't know what you're doing, you're not well versed in any of these kind of, like, you know, because there's, you have to learn the ethics of anything. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Egyptian magic, any kind of the stuff that's being done these days. If you don't know anything about it, what are the consequences? What are the risks that you're taking? And, you know, even if you're even working within the realm of possibilities, you shouldn't even be attempting it. Like, and you certainly shouldn't be, you know, going online and getting a spell from the internet. Okay.
Right. You know, and you're right. And that goes with the, when we were talking about the Ouija board, people should stay away from things they don't understand.
Because their intent is not always the best.
That's
their
right. It's all about intent.
Manipulate. Their intent could be to take free will. And you know what? We have a caller for Bobby from Arizona.
You just switched gears doing 90 miles an hour. What the hell is that?
There you go.
Wow, we were talking about all kinds of stuff, and also we just went into our phone call. Hi, Arizona. How are you? See, it was so fast, our caller doesn't even know they're on. Arizona, are you there? Caller from Arizona on the Psychic Access Show. I heard him there. Are we supposed to guess? Is this a test of our?
Well, I don't know. Netflix? It's not a test. We'll see if they come back. And again,
so
for...
Along... Yeah, I guess so. So along those lines that you were talking about.
She was enlightened.
What's that all about?
I don't know what that's all about, but
somebody's on hold. They don't know we're here, and they're having a discussion in the background. Is what it sounds like to me.
Okay,
yeah,
well,
the caller's still on.
I'm going to give the number out if somebody wants to put it in the chat room. The number for the online for the readings, the free readings, is 724-444-4851. And because of our time constraints, we really can only take like one question from each person. And so please feel free to call in 724-444-4851. I don't know if Arizona's back, but we'll have to wait for them, huh?
Sure thing.
In silence?
No, not in silence.
In
we're waiting to see.
Telepathy. Telepathy.
Okay, maybe here you go, Bobby. Let's try again.
All right, Arizona, hi, are you there? They don't know we're here. They better be careful what they're talking about. Hello, Arizona. Okay, let's go to California. Hi, in California, are you there?
Hello.
Oh, good grief. Hello.
Hi.
How are you?
This is Helen, and
Helen.
I just have a question
about
my love life.
Well, sure. Why not? You're a lovely person and deserve to have one, I think.
I think so, too. I think so, too. but I have not... been in a relationship for a very long time, and I just want to know what you see for my immediate future.
Well, you know, you haven't been in one for a long time, and obviously by choice, and I like the fact that you haven't been in one for a long time. I really like the energy around that, because a lot of self-discovery, a lot of coming into your own, a lot of just cementing you you know, into your path, I think. Can you feel that?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So I totally agree with all that, and I think it's great. There's a little bit of mistrust kind of going on, too, when we're looking at maybe dating or going into a relationship. I think you're all for that great man to come into your life, but I also feel there's slight hesitancy because of, you know, obviously we've all been hurt before, and if that's what it all stems from, there just seems to be a slight mistrust. I would work on letting the remainder of that go. I don't think it's a lot. I think you've done a lot of work on that already, or just the self-discovery that we just talked about for the past 2 or 3 years has been really great in getting rid of, you know, that mistrust or that hesitancy already. And so I think there's still just a little piece left that I would love to see you let go of. But I think in a timeline, let's see, 6 months, 4 months, 10 to 3, 2, 1.5, probably about another month and a half, I can see you meeting somebody very nice. And I think that you're also the kind of person that you know, obviously doesn't, you know, maybe go to a bar to meet somebody. So I see you meeting somebody in a quite natural setting. In other words, you just happen to be going, let's say, this is just a for instance, but you go to the same park every day and all of a sudden then you just notice this person and you just guys start talking. It's quite natural. And he asks you to coffee, if you understand what I'm saying. So it'll be something that's really quite natural like that. And then it'll be easy, you know, just allowing it to develop into where it does and quite natural. And I think it'll be a really good relationship for you because I wasn't kidding. I think you're a lovely person and gosh darn it, it's about time.
Thank you. I met someone a few months ago. Do you see that going anywhere or turning into anything?
I didn't see you with anybody, to be honest. And to me, you know, I would take that as a sign, you know, in a way.
Yeah.
As I'm tuning into this person, I think they're a bit sharp is the feeling I'm getting. So not as, I don't know, not as smooth, as easy as you would like it, if that makes sense. And so I don't know that this one will last, but I think that there will be a friendship there. But the one that you're with now, I don't necessarily, that's not part of what I was seeing coming into your life. You see what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't mean break up with them tomorrow, you know, because some psychic guy told you this. Just allow the relationship to go wherever it does. I think it's a big mistake that some people make when they call us and ask for advice like that. And say that we don't necessarily see the relationship working out or what have you, then they forego that relationship because, well, what's the point anyway? You know what I mean? But like,
right.
There's so much to learn from the relationship. This relationship takes you to the next one and where you need to go. And you don't necessarily just break up with the person. And then there's always, oh my gosh, the factor is that we could be wrong and this guy could be great for you. You know what I mean? Like I could be totally off. So you can't just take everything that we say as just gospel and then do something about it necessarily. You want to look into where it is that you're headed. And I think it's important to know not only where you've come, but where you're headed and why you're headed there and why you deserve a good relationship or the exact opposite, right? If I felt that there were some problems with you, I would say, here's what I would recommend working on first. You're not ready for a relationship. You see what I mean? I think all of that's important. And so, if that makes sense.
That makes a lot of sense. It really does.
Listen,
there really is nothing other than like an email exchange with this person that I met. But
good. Well, you know, find out where it goes. I don't see a romantic. I it just doesn't seem to do it for you. You know what I mean? Like the spark just isn't quite there for me when I feel that. So, but you know, don't stop emailing. It's still, you know, it's still correspondence and you never know. Again, you could have a really great friendship out of it. But you're ready. It's a great time for you, and I think that's going to be. I think it'll really be wonderful. So.
Great.
Okay.
Well, thank you very much.
Well, you're so welcome. What part of California are you calling from?
San Francisco.
Oh, okay. I'm in Pasadena, so.
Oh, okay.
All right. Well, thanks for calling into the show.
All right. Thank you.
Okay. Bye.
Thank you, Bobby. That was great. Marie?
Bobby's on Pasadena. He's in Mount Rushmore. I'm sorry. I just had to say that. Yes, hi. I know.
Pennsylvania.
Thank you, Brenda. Hello, Pennsylvania. How are you?
Well, the first thing I want to say is if this reading isn't guaranteed, I want my money back.
Joe, happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. And you got me. Isn't that ironic?
Happy
birthday, something.
Joe.
Everybody's saying happy birthday to Joe. Ironically, Joe, you got me again. Ha ha. I'm ready for you, Joe. It's your birthday.
I've been after you all along.
Yeah. So Joe, what is it that I can actually?
I'm trying to. I have this question about, it's connected with the archives and all the different ideas that, your lecturers have given, and
right.
all the discussions that you guys who are talented and psychic. Still find something to discuss. So to me, I'm wondering if this is like a period where we haven't been able to grasp some of the information, and maybe it was around before in Egyptian times or whatever, but at least in recent history, we're just becoming aware of some of the facts, you know.
Right.
And even though people discuss these different subjects, sometimes you don't even understand what they're talking about. But I think that, at least in my case, I'm starting to think about things that never occurred to me to think about. And I learned electronics, and I studied history and all that stuff when I was in school, and none of these esoteric things came up, or at least they didn't penetrate.
Now they are, so you're on a spiritual quest.
I'm not sure what the question is, but
yeah,
do you think that there's like a turning point or whatever?
So this is a question about your spiritual quest presently. Is that,
I guess
is that
it's
what
it's about me, yeah. It's all about me.
It is. It's your birthday, too. Well, Joe, because I've known you for years, and I'll tell you something. I applaud you, everybody listen up, because I applaud Joe in being open to where you are now because of that, Joe, what I'm seeing is your spiritual quest is about family. It all comes back to the family and about seeing it in a very positive light, whereas maybe before things were judgmental. That's in the past. I've seen everything that was so judging and negative, even self-judgment, Joe, that you may have been participating on yourself. It's all behind you. I do also get your spiritual quest is heading towards a female energy, and she looks like. And even though I know about something that's going to be coming up soon, this is part of your spiritual quest. I think is connecting for yourself with a companion, and I'm not saying it may be the one that we know you're getting ready to see. You know, whatever you're opening up to that, but I do see a motherly, like Mother Earth, companion. And this is someone that will also be on the same level as you. It's like you're both on the same page on the direction you're taking. And I'm also seeing a change of residence coming. You know, Joe, what's happening, what I'm seeing is everything is there's so much transformation you've already put it out there regardless. You know, it's not that this is my reading. I'm just reading for you. You own this reading. But I see you heading in a direction where I see a brand new feeling of a residence, more of a home, like not that you're not there right now, but more like in a way where you would be with somebody else, where you could be living out your lifelong companionship, which I think is a good thing. And it's a gentle and kind thing to do for yourself or being open. I also see you working on something like we're real excited about something new and being like the youthful person working like a workhorse. And it's a really exciting time there too. It's like having a passion about some new idea. And Joe, you've got so much that you've manifested already, and that I see you moving towards, that you're doing fantastic, really. I do see a spiritual death coming to an end, whereas a new beginning can open up to you, which is kind of like what you were talking about in some ways at the beginning of this conversation I had with you, because you're opening up and about how things are new. You know, you're listening to, you listen to archives all over the place. I know that. Everybody listen up, because Joe does, and you can get a lot from him. Joe,
if you haven't thought about these things at all, I mean, it's a great way to get your feet wet, you know.
Yeah, and you've gotten your feet wet. And Joe, also, you're searching for a deeper meaning, and you're on the right track. And this is about you, your time. This is about you. It's all about you, not just because it's your birthday, but it is all about you. And I see some really exciting, I like just living vicariously looking through this, because even more what I do, I love to know that I love ongoing spiritual and, you know, spiritual insight. I need to keep going on my own too as well, no matter if I'm professionally doing this. And what I'm seeing here is really, makes me feel really good, honestly, for you.
The stack of birthday cards I got today.
Well, you'll get another one after I hang up from this. So I hope I helped you, but you know what? You keep coming back, and you just are lovely. We all love it that you are really open to everything that we're all presenting here, because this is what the new world's all about.
Well, I've always been open to learning things, and this is like a whole new field I've never really been in. I've been in paranormal things,
yeah,
but with a scientific interest, you know, not really spiritual.
But you embraced it, so, and I applaud you, and everybody out there should be listening. He embraced it, and that's wonderful. That gives, it's a wonderful feeling. Anyway, that's the way my view is. So there you have it, Joe. Happy birthday to you, and I will send you a singing card later of a beautiful woman.
Well, at least you're happy. Thank you.
No, you're happy too. I'm happy for you.
No, I had a very good day. I'm really happy.
I'm glad. Well, Joe, thank you, and I'm glad I got you.
Just don't publish any emails that I might send you.
I won't, not without your release. Okay. Good night, right. Joe.
Good
happy
night,
rest of your birthday.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
Thanks, Maureen. And I want to give a special happy birthday out to Joe, too. He's a Capricorn. Yay! Capricorns rule. Ha, ha, ha.
Well, you can't have everything.
You know, Steve's a Capricorn. Steve's a Capricorn, too. Steve,
I
who
know.
Can't talk.
When is his birthday? When is
I
his
think
birthday?
It's like right now. It's almost really soon here.
Or did he just have it? Oh, we're going to have to ask him when his birthday is. He's being, hopefully he's not sick on his birthday. Anyhow, I just wanted to mention quick before I go into the next caller, which is mine from South Carolina, that when we do these readings, they're just little snippets. And to get a more broader view and a more complete view of your psychic information, you can, you know, call in and or go online to psychicaccess.com and get a more detailed reading from some fantastic, authentic psychics. Okay, hello, South Carolina. South Carolina.
Hello.
Hi there. How are you? This is Lady Brenda.
Me.
How can I help you?
Is that Renee?
It's Lady Brenda?
No, this is Renee from South Carolina.
Oh, hi, Renee. This is Lady Brenda. How can I help you this evening?
Hi. I've been experiencing like a lot of anxiety and depression because I just cannot see what I need to do in the world next. My gifts and what I should be doing.
Okay, let's take a peek here. Let's see. Well, it looks like you're wanting to definitely do something different. And, you know, I believe it's right around you. It could even be something that you've done before or you do naturally. But I do see you going in some different directions. It's about giving back right now. And it's also sharing some talents that you have. And these could even be talents that are from the past that you haven't been using for a while. This year, I see you kind of opening up to the world or kind of belonging more to people around you and spreading out, a lot more social stuff coming your way. I feel that there's a man who's going to give you a hand, you know, in this and kind of opening these doors for you. Are you looking for a new career path right now?
I don't know, really, a career. I'm financially, you know, in a good situation. I just want to just be my purpose. I've done so much. I'm a shaman, and I'm a retired teacher, and a psychic of sorts, a new psychic, a baby psychic. And
but, you got to start somewhere, right?
And I've done some writing, and, you know, and... But I just seem to just be just lost or just overwhelmed or just, you know, or scared or I don't know what, you know, but I just can't see it. And things aren't opening up. I'm not running in, you know, I don't know where to go to bump into the people or situations that might help me or whatever. I just seem to be in a stuck place.
Well, the very first thing I see is I do see a mentor for you. We see this man who's going to give you a hand up or a leg up into a spiritual path that you're kind of, I believe you're already on it. And, you know, one of the things that is causing confusion around you is there's too much information coming in at once. And that's all part of the whole seeking process. And sometimes we can't really fight that. I mean, it can be confusing because it's all hitting us at once. But that could be the process that goes on for the next 9 months for you before you really get focused on, you know, what your specific path is, what your specific gift is, and what your gift is to the public and to the world. You see what I mean? Written works are out there. I would start that now. Even if you're journaling, I would start that now. Okay. Are you doing that?
No, I'm not doing that. No.
Well, that is a big part of, if that's going to kind of, if you start doing that, if you start the journaling, that's going to kind of bring into focus some of this stuff, because you're going to notice that you're going to be journaling about the same thing over and over again, and that could be the thing that wants to come through now.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I see a deep connection to the earth. Are you growing things now? Do you have a garden? Do you have herbs?
I do not. I am a Virgo.
Okay. Well, there's definitely a connection to the, and you know, as a Virgo, you're never going to be content as just being a student. At some point, you're going to have to be a teacher. So that is part of it. And that could even be part of subconsciously what's pushing you, you know, to really, really achieve and achieve fast. But I have to tell you, in looking at this, you know, you have a lot of knowledge already. You just need to fine-tune a lot of this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Is what I see.
I've had some deaths in my life, and I don't know if that's, you know, if my mother died and a love died and things like that. And I don't know if they're around me or if my mother's holding me back or what's, you know.
The only thing that I feel that's coming from your mother that is holding you back at this point is I really feel that in life she had a fear of some of the things that you might be going through or delving into because of it was misunderstanding. Now that that's dissipated, she's in a better place. But the strongest spirit that I see coming through is of someone else that you are close to that you're in a relationship with.
Yeah, that'd be my husband.
And what I'm getting from him is, you know, he wants you to move forward. And I also see that he's from the other, he's there on the other side encouraging you. And even in your journaling, you could speak to him about stuff. He's going to give you different signs that'll show you that he's still with you, he's walking beside you, and he's encouraging you on this path.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Okay, well, the person, you know, my husband is alive, you know, but he's not a spiritual person.
Who's this spiritual person on the other side?
This was my first love.
Yeah. Well, this is the spirit that I see from the other side.
Or it could be my father. Yeah, it could be my father. I feel like he's my father. Yeah. Yeah, that's who it is. Well, thank you very, very much. I really have enjoyed that, this. And I went to Egypt with Mary and listened to this. And I love your site. And I will call in for another reading. Thank you very much. It was
all right,
great.
Honey. Well, you have a wonderful evening.
Thank you. You do the same. Thank you.
Bye-bye. Okay, Bobby, you've got a call from Florida.
Hello, Florida. What's up?
Hello.
Hello. How are you?
Doing good.
Okay.
My name's Molly.
Hi, Molly. And what can I do for you?
I interviewed for a job before Christmas. It would be the perfect position for me. What I basically have wanted to do for quite a while, and haven't heard anything. I thought I would hear something by now. Was wondering if you thought this was possibly the career move for me.
I'm all online with career move and moving into, you know, what's perfect for you and things like that. Did they even give you a time when you were supposed to hear back from them?
No, they just told me they had other people to interview. I did hear that there were delays in some of those interviews.
Right. You know, I'm always a big proponent of, you know, you need to call them. You know what I mean? Like, I never let it go by for, you know, there's only a few days, maybe a week to a week and a half before I would call a producer or somebody like that and say, I just wanted to get a heads up, because it's unfair to keep you sitting there waiting by your phone. You know what I mean? And so part of this is you standing up for yourself and fighting for what it is that you want, you know? I would definitely give them a call. We're, you know, far into the new year now. I think that, I mean, have you thought about doing that, or did you just not want to bother them, or are you not, does that make you uncomfortable to call them?
Well, the type of job it is, it could take up to a month until they actually notify someone that they got it. So it's not something immediate, like other professions.
No, I understand. But even then, if they're still deciding, at least you would know, right? Or that's what you're hoping, I guess. I'm telling you, right?
Yeah, I was just wondering if you foresee that I'd be going into a new job anytime soon.
Yes. Listen, we'll get off the coaching stuff and we'll just give you to your psychic answer that you're looking for. Hopefully it'll make you feel a bit better. I see you, you know, going to do a new job, and this position's good for you. You're right. It's great. I think there's about three other competitors for this position, and I think you stand a really good shot at it. Absolutely.
That'd be great.
Okay.
I've been in the same position for 12 years, and I'm ready to move on to better things. So.
No, I mean, you know, yeah, absolutely. You know, technically, you know, 5 years ago would have been a good time to move, but you know, you're loyal, you know, you stay, you know, they would be, you know, destitute without you, and we need you here. And, you know, I think you stay out of that and, you know, because again, you're loyal to the kind of person that you are and such, but goodness sakes. Yeah. It's way time to move on. You've so been waiting to start this new chapter of your life, you know what I mean? Or not. I've always looked at life, so like you hit 40 and then it's like, so now the next 40 years it's like I can grow up again. So the next 40 years, what am I gonna do? And that's what it feels like to me for you. Like so you're now, I have no idea how old you are and it doesn't matter, but now it's like the next 30 or 40 years, you know, and you're waiting to do this, but I think the job was one of the things that was holding you back. It feels like everything else has been in place. It's just been the career. So it's absolutely time. And once that falls into place, you know, hang on.
Okay, cool. Awesome.
All right. Well, thanks for calling in. I appreciate it.
Thanks for the insight. Have a good day.
Take care, sweets. Bye.
Bye.
That was good because, yeah, another ride of a lifetime, I always say, in we don't just get one, but a couple, Bobby, you know?
Yes. Yeah, that was good. Thank you, Bobby. That was really good.
Oh, sure. Thanks. Yeah, sure. Thanks.
Oh, yeah, sure. Yeah, sure. Yeah, mm-hmm. Just like it's nothing, like, you know, it just rolls off his back.
And
there
Bobby
was a
can,
lot to it, really.
And Bobby... And Bobby can be found at psychicaccess.com if you'd like a more in-depth reading with him, because he's something.
I didn't, you know, I didn't, I guess it was because I didn't come say anything brilliant, you know, it was just.
Did something more profound. No, we're kidding. We're kidding.
Bobby, I didn't mean it that way. How dare you think that? Okay. I know I have a reading from Massachusetts. Bobby should remember that in a past life.
Hi, Maureen, you're up.
Hello, Massachusetts. How are you?
Hi, Maureen. I'm good, thanks. This is Ellen. We've spoken before.
Oh, hi, Ellen.
And
okay.
I was wondering. Hi. Hi. I'm a little voice challenged at the moment, but I'm coming up to, two court dates with two different landlords, and I was wondering if you could give me any advice.
Okay, so you have two different landlords, and you know, this is something lucky, well, for me and you, that I have a little bit, well, insight, knowledge, education a little bit, except not maybe in your state, but okay, this is, so you're wondering how they're all going to, two of them, are they going to be around the same, okay, two of
yeah,
them.
Yeah, they're a
are
week
they,
apart,
are,
one's tomorrow and the other one is next week.
Wow.
Thursday.
Okay. Are they for the same? Are they for two different situations or two different?
Yeah.
For
them, the issue is obviously both money. One for me was no hot water, you know, those kind of things, and the second is harassment.
Okay, but it's for the same. It's the same one within the same landlord tenant. Is what I guess. I mean,
no,
correct?
It's two totally different landlords.
Oh wow! Okay. Too bad. I don't know. Okay, Massachusetts. Okay, this is what I'm getting, and I do. This is what I'm seeing. There's something about. I do see that there was a delay. Okay, and this might help you make sense or help me make sense. It looks like there was a delay. You had to delay some short trip, which was to your best interest, because there could have been a situation where they, you know, when landlords can be so tricky when you're taking them into the court, because you've gotten this far. And obviously, a lot of times, I think tenants are not that smart, and they can get a judgment by default. So I'm seeing that, so I can help you decipher which one I'm getting, because you have two of them. So I'm seeing that one that you did recently put a delay not going somewhere, which was to your advantage. And I do see you getting feeling a liberation. I do see a very positive person that's, so you're, are you going in front of a judge or small claims or in front of a?
The first one is small claims, and the second one is, I'm not quite sure, but it's not small claims.
Civil, I think would be, I understand.
Civil, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, this is the one I'm seeing. I do see a very positive, very, let me put this, objective judge. And so I'm going on this, what I'm picking up now as being the first one. Is that one, I just need to ask you, is this one the one tomorrow? No, that's not the one tomorrow. Is this the one next week? Would you be going in front of a judge next week?
Yes.
Okay.
Tomorrow, I think, in front of a judge too, but it's the small claims.
Small claims, right. So the one I'm seeing, okay, what I'm first seeing, I just want to tell you, I do feel... You're going to, for the one next week, I'm seeing this, I see you finally getting a sense of liberation from this. You're no longer self-imprisonment. You can't, before we really couldn't see clearly what's going to become of it. I see it being in your favor, positive. I see it being in your favor. Whatever that will mean, it is favorable for you. I don't see a judgment or anything. I don't know. I don't see you getting a bad deal on this. Now, I may just mean you won't be getting a bad deal of having it on your record and everything, but good for you, because I know that this must have been hard, especially the one next week coming up, is hard to hang in there with something like this, because you're up against against something
terrible
that normally people walk away from, and it's really nice to see. I like you're in a different state, but because I worked with people in the state of California, that you went all this way, and it's very exhausting to do this. And especially for the one next week, it's very exhausting because you're up against more of the, you know, it's a different court scene.
Yeah.
I do, like I said, I do see you feeling liberated, meaning whatever happens, I feel the outcome's positive. I don't know if it's exactly what you would want, but I do see you being freedom from this at last.
Okay,
so it will be positive. Now, the one tomorrow, I absolutely see you will be able to present yourself in a very good way. You look like you're able to, let me put it this way, Helen, you look like you're coming across, it's not just I'm saying that you're pretending, but you're coming across as a very intelligent woman, and also you're also going to present that you were trying to, it looks like you were trying to make, you were trying to deal with this without going into small claims. Very much so, they're going to get this. Is that true, that you were trying to work with them?
Well, there were a lot of violations, and I feel like somebody needs to know.
The one tomorrow.
Yeah. You know, hot water, no heat.
Right.
He keeps trying to settle with me, but I think it needs to go into court or else.
No, I'm not saying that, but like I said, you are going to, this is for the one tomorrow. It looks like you're going to get across that you were trying to be, you did everything right, is what I guess I'm trying to say is, you presented, that you're going to be able to present that you tried, you know how you write somebody and you say they'll do this, you know, do that, you know, that kind of documentation. I see that you're prepared and you have everything that you need in order to have a successful outcome on this one for tomorrow. And I also feel that you're being a little bit, it's like I call, like almost like holding on, you're being a little bit harassed not to, God, it just never ceases to amaze me. Is the person that you're up against a little flighty, the landlord, it looks like there's a young, he looks younger, or he looks like he's flighty and he's charming and he thinks he's all that and then some. And it looks like you tried to connect with him. Like I said, okay, then this is for tomorrow. You're going to be fine. And you know what? Just remember what you've done. Don't feel intimidated. I know, even if you do, like I said, I see you coming across, and you're going to be viewed as coming across as very well grounded, a woman who has her information, and is not someone that they're going to. I mean, I think you might be nervous about this, but it's going to be, you're going to do well on both of these, and I also get that. It was hard for you to make a decision about this, but I feel that also that when the odds are against you, because it wasn't like it was easy, you were getting intimidated, you know, that stuff. Of course, it always goes on. But this is definitely both of them. I see you're going to, I don't like to use this word, but it sounds like Judge Judy, prevail. You're going to prevail on both of them. And I guess, Helen, what I want to say is remember that, like I said, I feel that you really have everything that you, like I said, you'll be seen as someone that really has it together. You're not a flake. You wouldn't be going through this if you were. But there are a lot of people that go into this and they're flaky and they don't want to pay the rent or do with this or that. You have everything and you will be able to show. And like I said, just remember, and I don't even need to tell you this. The fact of it is, you did what you tried to do with the one for tomorrow you're going to go to. And you can show this by what you have as far as documentation of trying to work with this person. The person was flighty. I can see this landlord's flighty. He's just like all over the place. The fact of it is, I feel that both of these are going to be resolved in your favor.
Okay.
And I don't know if it would be that much like what your expectations are, but still I feel that they're going to be favorable for you.
Okay, great.
So, great for you. This is your reading. You should thank yourself. And your personal power is really intact. And if you start feeling otherwise, grab... I don't think you'll feel otherwise. I think that you know exactly. It's not like you're going unprepared at all. And
sure,
good for
scary.
You. Good for you for taking care of this. A lot of people, like I said, don't. They get messed over because they don't think they have any leg to stand on anything. So I see both of them, like I said, very good. And this shows a lot of people that shouldn't be put through this, that aren't flaky, that are just trying to, it's a principle of it. And you're taking it, and it's hard, and it'll be over. It's good. And I feel that you'll feel much better about why you did this too. Right. What was that noise? Cat. Anyway, so there you have it, Helen. Well, I hope I helped you, but this is your reading.
Yes,
so
very much. Thank you very much. I really appreciate it.
You're welcome, and take care, and I look forward to hearing later.
I will let you know.
Okay,
thank you. Bye-bye. Okay, bye-bye.
Thanks, Maureen. Okay, we have a couple of questions from chat. And the first one for me is Julie's question, and Julie wants to know if her daughter's restaurant is going to sell anytime soon. Well, let's take a look. Let's take a peek here. Let's see. Well, the biggest thing that I see is she still has an attachment to this restaurant. She really does. And in order for it to sell, there's going to be some, there has to be some other communication, like perhaps some different ads or some other information about the restaurant to bring it into the forefront so that more people will know about it. I do believe that there's somebody from the past and perhaps even a customer that's will be interested in buying the restaurant, being involved with the restaurant. My feeling is when I look in here that the fourth month of the year has a lot of energy around it, in which Julie's daughter is in a position to make a deal with someone. However, I do not feel that partnerships are good right now. It feels like the clean-cut deal of actually selling it and passing over the restaurant to somebody else looks very good. And I feel that this is in the fourth month of the year and it's towards the end of April. So there you go, Julie, your question. And we have another one from Helen for you, Bobby. Okay. Did you get that one? Did you get her? Her question is?
Yeah, about
her,
the job being unpredictable.
Yes. Uh-huh.
So she says, things at work are very unpredictable. Do you see me staying at the same company or should I start exploring my options? Helen, I think you need to stick it out just a little bit longer. But what you may be noticing is how the other options or starting to think about doing something different is starting to bubble up to the surface. And that means that it's all in perfect timing. And so that's how we pay attention to our intuitiveness or that inspiration that comes up to us. When that starts bubbling up to the surface, then we know it's time to start paying attention. So you want to kind of keep it, you know, on the burner there, not the back burner, but on the burner. Stay where you're at just for now and really start to develop, what do you want to do? What does working for a particular company look like? What do you want in a boss? What do you want in coworkers? How do you want to feel when you wake up and go to work every morning? These types of things. And when you start doing that, naturally, it will start to transition and you'll know right when it's time to leave your job. But I'm seeing that that won't be for another couple of months here yet, that I think that, like I say, I think you just need to stay where you're at just now. But definitely, it's time to start shuffling the cards, as it were, you know, to start lining up what it is that you may want to do. So that hopefully that makes sense for you. I was going to ask her if that made sense, but she's not on the phone. So there you go.
Thank you, Bobby.
Sure.
Have it.
Well, okay, as Maureen would say, there you have it. And I love that. We're just going to have to call it a Maureen phase, and we'll all burglarize it here because it's such a great phrase. Anyhow, that brings us to the end of yet another fantabulous, and I want to say fantabulous show. I want to thank Doug, who works behind the scenes and keeps us on track as our executive producer. And I want to thank you to my co-hosts for joining me tonight. And next week, what do you have in mind, Maureen?
It's not me.
Oh, is it Bobby?
Really?
Bobby?
Hello.
What do you have in mind next week?
Well, see, you surprised me because I was still I was talking to Helen and smiling back
there,
at her for saying thank you, and I'm very unprepared to tell you about my show. Give me one
show?
Second.
No,
nope, give me a second. Hang on.
He's so secretive.
He is secretive.
I am secretive. Yeah, so tune in and find out. there's a movie entitled Awaken Soul to Soul, and her name is, I don't know how to pronounce her name, so it's either Denisa, which I like, Denisa Perry. She's a psychologist and a filmmaker. And basically, what if you could virtually sit down soul to soul with a mystic sage? There's this evolutionary new documentary And they do just that. It's spiritual awakening through one-on-one direct experiences in real time with 9 sages, healers, and teachers, including Barbara Marks Hubbard. It'll be fascinating to find out what is all this about, how does she do it, and especially to be able to, like I say, sit down and make these soul connections with these 9 sages directly on the big screen. So we're going to find out more about that.
That sounds really interesting. Yeah. Oh, I can't wait for that. That is going to be fun.
Her link will be up, you know, after the show here tonight. You'll visit our Psychic Access page and such like that, and you'll be able to find out more about what I'm talking about, and then even see we have our videos, and then there will be a short little clip of it and that type of thing. So
that's really interesting. Yeah. Well, say your goodbyes, Maureen.
Okay, I'm saying goodbye. Bless your hearts, and there you have it.
How about you, Bobby? Say your goodbye.
Bless your hearts. Bless your goodbyes and hearts.
He's stealing my stuff again.
Okay. Round.
And bless Steve's hearts. Bless Steve's throat.
I know. We miss Steve. I know he's with us in spirit.
I'm sorry I couldn't be with you guys tonight, but I think wonderful. Bobby, you were especially brilliant tonight. I appreciate everything you've done. And I think that you absolutely rock the psychic world. Thank you, Steve. That's very nice. That's
so you know nice. What? I don't think that's really Steve. That's your little Steve doll, huh?
I don't know.
Little Steve puppet.
Just pull the string. Bobby, you rock. Why, thank you, doll Steve.
Goodbye, everybody.
Goodbye.
Hello, my name is Res Miranda. If you're having relationship, career, or life issues, I'm inviting you to experience what it's like to have access to professional, highly accurate psychics and spiritual advisors you can trust to care and help you. Register now to get your free 6-minute reading by telephone or chat. Get answers. Get access. Psychic access. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. PsychicAccess.com.